The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I am so excited to be talking about characters because I have an author here who's got some amazing characters, Mindy Carlson, here on I Should Be Writing Season 18, Episode... It's up in the air whether it's 51 or 52 because I just numbered some today and got confused. So it's in the 50s.
Well, I should be writing.
Hi there. Welcome to I Should Be Writing. This is the podcast for wannabe fiction writers. I'm your host, Mer Lafferty. Been doing this since 2005. It'll be 17 years next Tuesday. And I feel old. But still very excited. I don't know what we're going to do to celebrate, but we should do something. But we'll talk about that next Tuesday. Today we're talking about the fact that I am trying to get this book cover onto this feed while I talk, and it's hard to do. Is that going to work? That is going to work. Hooray. Okay, we got it. We got it. It's big. We're going to shrink it down. Fantastic. Okay, we got the cover. It looks good. Whew. Okay.
Great. Oh, thank you.
So we usually talk about what we've been up to. I actually did not write today. I did a lot of admin for podcasting that I was behind on. And I did my newsletter, which is writing only, it's marketing. And I worked on all of the visual aspects of the game I'm running tonight, which is Brindlewood Bay, 8 o'clock p.m. It's a RPG. We're little old ladies solving crimes. There might also be some eldritch horror in there. But hope people can come back at 8 for that. So yeah, not a lot of writing, but I was very productive, and so I'm not going to feel bad about that. Mindy, can you tell us what you're working on, if you want?
Oh yeah, of course, of course. So I'm currently working on a novel called Weird Sisters, which is a 3-point-of-view novel, and I got, it was done... you know, sort of done. And then I read through it again, like a reader, and realized I needed another character in the book.
Oh my gosh.
I know, it was so stupid of me, but I was like, oh, this character can't fulfill this purpose because it goes completely against what their entire profile.
Oh,
so
gosh.
I needed another character to fulfill a certain task in the thing. And he's been really fun to write. I got to write a really good drunk scene with
Excellent.
Him, where the sisters get him drunk and pump him for information.
Excellent.
It's a fun time.
Right now, I remember what I was going to look up. I have some rejections to talk about and good news in email. And if anybody has any good news to share, rejections do count because you can get... You're a writer if you're getting rejected. You're doing the work. You're just not getting published yet. But getting rejected, it hurts, but you're doing your job. And so that's why we celebrate it here. If anybody has any rejections to talk about, put it in the chat. If you're listening to this later, tell me about it, and I'll put it on the stream next time, such as I'm doing for Brian right now. Brian is our listener who checks in every month and gives me his entire total. So, Brian, I'm very happy to say, sold a short story to an anthology. So, he says, finding the perfect market for a story takes lots of time and effort and heartbreak. 39 rejections for this story. So, That's amazing. Also, guys, as Brian shows, when you get rejected a whole bunch of times and then show a sale for that thing, it sounds really good and you give everybody else hope. So big yay button for Brian. That's fantastic. And I don't have the confetti in this one. That's what I forgot. Okay, Minnie, excuse me. We're going to turn off your video just for a second so we can hit the yay button properly. We'll be right back. You're still in audio, but we got to have the yay and the confetti. That's fantastic, Brian. Brian also reports 15 more rejections. So yay for that as well. One of these days I'm going to remember to put the confetti on this option, this scene. So apologize for that, Mindy. But so I'm going to add Brian's number by hand when we're done. But in chat, we've got Underpope with 1. Fantastic. Starry Green with 2. That's amazing. Meerkat with 2. You guys are on fire. That's great. We got 5. So I got 1. 2, 3, 4, 5. Wait, it didn't count 1, did it? That's weird. Okay, there we go. I still need to get a ding or some sort of noise in there whenever we get a rejection to count. Everybody's very excited about your cat, so if your cat wants to be on screen, chat will be delighted.
Come here, Albus.
I got Mindy equals me during every work Zoom call.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I've got Rosa in here because she was barking at the post office person, but she has gone behind the green screen, so... And I haven't really set up a dog cam since Tricky died, so I need to figure that out. So Mindy, do you have any good news to share with us?
Well, Albus is back.
Yay.
I don't know. Well, my good news is that on Sunday, I'm about to leave to Canada for a 4-day writing retreat. I'm going to drop my kids off at a curling training camp.
Oh, wow.
And then I am going to go to, at my husband's insistence, I am going to go to a bed and breakfast and just finish this book that I'm working on.
Well, that is a good, spouse.
That is, yeah, he's very supportive of this particular career path that I'm on. So he's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Excellent. So, and your kids will come back and they're going to have really good muscles along their ribs. Curling's a weird sport. It does weird muscle groups. I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, it's fine. Like, yeah, it's curling is a lot of core, because I curl as well. My husband curls, and it's a lot of core muscles and the, you know, your external obliques.
Yeah.
Along your back and then your legs. And it's a lot of, I do a lot of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Which helps with the curling.
Very smart. Yeah. My husband took a curling class when we had curling at our local ice rink, and he came home and he was, you know, he wasn't going to make fun of it. He knows it's a sport, but he was not expecting his obliques to be as on fire as they were after curling. So that's a very interesting part of the body that you didn't know you needed. Of course, it is the core, which everyone knows you need a good core. So I need a good core. I was diagnosed with Achilles tendonitis recently, and I just read on the Runner's World website that it's connected to weak hips, and I've got other problems connected to weak hips, and it's all the hips' fault, and it's cranky making. So, yeah.
Yeah, I just do a lot of yoga that really helps any of my aches and pains.
You know, I think that might be a good idea for me. Well, I am so happy and excited for your writing retreat, because it is, I did that at the end of May so I could get a book done, and it was very useful. I got a lot of words down.
Yeah, I mean, having a writing retreat like this is really a gift. I mean, I did this for myself for her dying day, is I started off going to an actual honest-to-goodness writer's retreat. Mm-hmm. Like, I had my outline done, but I didn't quite know where to go from there. And so I went to this writer's retreat and met some really great people writing all different genres. It was one of the bravest things I think I've ever done, because it was one of the first times I really acknowledged to myself that I was going to be a novel writer.
Oh, that's great.
And so I went up there, and by the time I got home, I had the first scene done, the last scene done, and the outline completely nailed down.
Wow. I can't imagine writing like that. That's amazing.
It was really liberating in a way, because it was kind of like, oh, okay, like, so I actually have a path that I'm going to go on. Like, this is actually the path that I can walk. And of course, I took like little, detours, procrastination detours.
Yeah.
Because I do, like, I'm a plotter, but I also have some panster kind of tendencies in there, where it's like, oh, this is going well. This dialogue is going really well. I really love what is happening. And so I want to just follow that for a little bit. But for other books that I had attempted to write, I'd gotten like 30,000 words in, and then they just all kind of like fell apart.
Oh, yeah.
And which was, frustrating, but at the same, so I had this one and I was like, no, this one feels really special. This idea feels really, really special to me. And so I want to see if I can get some help with it. And so I did. And that was like at the end of, that was like in October. And I got home then and I did NaNoWriMo for this book, and I got it all finished in 6 weeks.
Wow. That's amazing. And you gave me the perfect segue to tell us about Her Dying Day. I wish I could read the opening sentence, but I have the audiobook, not the physical book. But I know when you're one of those rare people who hooked me in the very first sentence. And I'm sorry?
Oh, I'm so glad.
Yeah, it's really, really good. If you have it available to read that sentence to us?
Yeah,
because that
I
would
do. I have it practically memorized.
I'm sure.
It goes, if you've never been stuck under the bed while your lover has sex with his wife, I suggest you skip it. It's no trip to Disneyland.
So that just, it says so much.
It does say so much. I mean, that line was really the first line that came out. I was at this retreat, and one of the exercises that they were having us do, which is actually an exercise I still do for all my books, is to write the first scene three different ways.
Oh, yeah.
So I wrote it first person present, and it was frankly a little boring. And then I wrote it third person present, and it was a little bit better, but not really. And I really wrestled with, like, what is the third way? What is this third way that I'm going to do? And so I sort of wandered around a little bit and went downstairs to the cafe and got a glass of wine, and then came back up to my room. And on the way up to my room, June just like started speaking to me. And I put down the glass of wine as fast as I could and just started writing everything out by hand as fast as I could get it down. And that whole first scene came out in probably 30 to 45 minutes of writing.
Wow.
And it hasn't changed since.
So I recently did an episode. We're focusing on going back to basics right now. And I just realized I haven't actually asked you what the book's about. And I have been doing this for 17 years, and I'm really good at it. So let me back up just a bit, and you tell us why June is underneath the bed while the lover's with his wife above her, and where she goes from here.
So June is a 24-year-old film documentary student at a university in New York, and she is investigating the disappearance of a famous author, Greer Larkin, who disappeared 20 years previous. And Greer Larkin had been a very special author to her. She's kind of like the Agatha Christie of her time. And one day she vanished without a trace. And no one no one had ever seen her since. And so in the time period where like podcasts are happening, this, you know, and, you know, Twitch things like this are happening and there are websites and conspiracy theory websites, she decides that she is going to make a documentary about this disappearance and she's going to be the one to find out what actually happened to Greer Larkin.
Yes, and it is an adventure. So what I was saying was we're talking about characters and how to build them and what you've done for June, just like in the first couple of scenes, is stuff that I've struggled with, which is you've established her, you've made her likable, you've given her some pretty serious flaws, and you've also given us a rather character-defining backstory that is important. I think one of my weaker points is in character building is I kind of, my characters become themselves at their age fully formed, and I don't think about their past and how it molded them. So tell us a little bit about June's past, and that's not her name, is it?
No, her name is Pear Blossom Jubilee Masterson, and she was raised on a goat commune in the Adirondack Mountains. And she was kept there. Like, she was homeschooled there. She never went into town. You know, she hadn't seen a doctor or a dentist. I mean, she was really kept very isolated on this commune with her cousins, Meadow and Sage. And she just was so sheltered her entire life that she just couldn't wait to get out of there. And as a result, she doesn't really know exactly how the world works, but she's really good at faking that she knows how the world works, or it should work exactly as she wants it to work.
Yeah, she's kind of decided how it should work.
Yeah.
That's how it feels.
Yeah, that she did. She decided how the world was going to work around for her because she was tired of, you know, having to bend herself into pretzels in order to fit in on this commune and to be the good daughter and to do the things that her parents wanted her to do and live the life that her parents wanted her to live. And she just decided she wasn't going to do that anymore.
One thing that got me is it reminded me of being that age and in love because she doesn't say, at least at first, that she's in love with him. She's like, oh, this is a fun thing. But then she thinks about him constantly and is very clearly, you know, in the very throes of first love kind of dizziness. And you bring that across so well. And I'm just waiting for this to fall down terribly. And but she's still, you know, she's smart. She's tenacious. She's going after the story she needs to go. And you said she just kind of started talking to you, which I've heard people say before and I'm highly jealous of because that is not how my mind works. My characters don't talk to me. I wish they would, actually. But can you, if it wasn't just a fully organic process, is there anything you can tell us about how you did develop her and the goat commune and how that goat commune molded the decisions she makes in the story?
Sure. So part of what I do when I develop characters is I first think about what they look like, and I actually go onto Google and I Google actresses and actors' pictures of like, okay, I need like a brunette actress who's 24 and sort of just look to see if any of them kind of like twig for me. Like that's kind of what she looks like. And so I sort of go from there. And then there are these wonderful things called Enneagrams. You can go online and find them, but they're personality types. But the descriptions in the personality types are extremely in-depth. They talk about what their desires are, like their deepest fear. They have other famous people that were that Enneagram type. And so that makes some of it really easy where it's kind of like, oh, okay, like this is her deepest fear. you know, not being loved and not, you know, not finding her way in the world. And like, you know, just sort of, I have like these bits and pieces of who she is. And then I sort of get the Enneagram that fits her the best. And that kind of helps start filling in the gaps. But then I really have to sit down and think, okay, who are her parents then that allowed this to happen? Like, how did she become this particular personality type? Mm-hmm. You know, how, like, because it even goes into, you know, how you behave healthily in the world, how you behave in a not so healthy way, and how you behave in a destructive way. So when I look at the destructive parts, naturally, because it's a mystery, and think, okay, how did she get these flaws? How did she think that this was going to be okay? How did she, like, who are her family members and situation that got her to this? And for me, it was kind of like, okay, she would need to be really isolated. She would need to be far away from people. You know, and then the other backstory about her parents, because her parents have a giant secret too. You know, so it's kind of like, well, what is that secret that her parents are holding? Because there has to be some good reason why they would keep their daughter on a goat commune in the Adirondack Mountains and not even allow her to go into town necessarily during the day. Mm-hmm. So, like, they've got their secrets and their traumas in the past. So I kind of figure that out as well. And then that helps me sort of figure out, well, how would she react to that? Of course, she would leave, but she's been trained to be very close to her family. So she would keep her cousin Meadow, who also lives in New York City, very close to her. And she would, you know, she would, of course, be completely rebellious as to all of the moral lessons and character traits that her parents would have wanted her to have. Of course, she's going to rebel against that and do the exact opposite.
I just love the part where she's like, yeah, my mom would not approve of me sleeping with this guy. And I'm like, very few people are going to approve of you. You're not.
Yeah.
What's something to rebel against? That's not the first way to go, but.
Right. But that's also how small her world is.
Yeah.
Is the only person she really thinks about is how are her parents going to react to this? Mm-hmm. She doesn't think about, like, his wife. She doesn't really think about Meadow reacting to it so much, although Meadow definitely has her opinions.
Yes.
And, you know, and encourages her at every opportunity to dump this guy. Yeah. but it's really that just is another key of, like, how contained her world is and how she just doesn't really have friends that are going to sit her down and say, you are making a terrible error.
Yeah.
And that doesn't come, and, you know, and somebody finally does sit her down and says that, but it doesn't come until very late in the book, and it's by a person that she's not going to listen to anyway.
Yeah. Do you, so you're talking about all this thinking about backstory, and I'm assuming since you're a plotter, you do this before you get heavily started, but can you tell us a little bit about your process? I mean, when do you do the brainstorming of the character? When do you do all the messy writing kind of thing?
So the brainstorming of the character, a lot of my stuff, it's all of a sudden great dialogue just occurs to me. Like this book I'm working on right now, The Weird Sisters, the opening dialogue that I have for that is just, it just came to me of like one day a little sister is calling her big sister saying, mom's died. And the big sister says, are you sure she's really dead this time? And it's kind of like, okay. And then I just sort of think about, well, who says that? Like, how is that a dialogue that people, that would feel natural to people? Mm-hmm. And then I just sort of play with it in my head of like, well, what could this be? Oh, and then there's a third sister. And like, what kind of mom would they be like, is she really dead this time? Mm-hmm. You know, so like, okay, so what sort of traits does that? So it really, that's where I go for walks and I just sort of start spiraling this stuff out in my head. I have like papers all over my desk. As you can see, like, I don't know if you can see behind me, but I have like, I have like big, huge papers on my wall.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And that's where I start writing down some of these character traits and some of these things that like the connections to people. And so I write messy. I write real messy because it is out loud and in front of people when I'm writing out my stuff. And then I kind of like start putting it together in a more manageable thing. I use Scrivener because I think their character sheets are pretty accessible.
Yeah,
for
love Scrivener.
Kind of writing. I think Scrivener is fantastic. So I start putting them together in a character sheet, and sort of just sort of really start to crystallize around like what would their favorite songs be, and I put together like a song list for them. And so when I'm writing their parts out, I have like an album or something that is their music playing in the background to keep me in that headspace while I'm writing, because I also have two kids. And they absolutely will come in and interrupt me whenever they feel like they need to. And so the music helps keep me like in my head and how, and like what I'm doing. And the outline helps as well. Cause so after I have the character stuff down, then I do an emotional outline. Mm. So I have the scene, what happens in the scene. And then I have how it makes them feel. How it makes the main character feel and some of the more important supporting characters feel. And then because they feel that way, they go into the next scene of this is what they choose to do with those feelings.
Wow.
And how they choose to act in it, like that. This is how they choose to react to what happened, given how they feel about it. And then I go through and then there's like, you know, this is how they feel about this. Like, here's the next scene. And then like, oh, they have huge regrets. And you know, of course they're going to go to apologize. And, you know, but the other guy, he's really mad still and he's not going to listen. And so then I go into the next scene of like, you know, she goes to his work to apologize and say how sorry she is. And he, you know, blows her off and, you know, this, and they have a huge fight in front of everybody. And then later on he ends up dead. And of course she's this prime suspect. Mm-hmm. You know, that kind of stuff. So I really go with the emotions, which is what makes it, I feel like that's what makes a good mystery book flow, is just consistent, like a consistently believable emotional response from the character.
Interesting. I haven't heard of an emotional, of an emotional outline like that before. I was doing a group project and we had, I think she's in chat, but Spy Scribe, if you guys know, remember her from chat, Margaret Dunlap, taught me a lot about how TV writers do scenes and a lot of emotions of like, these two people, here's what he feels about her and here's what she feels about him. And that helped me. And then when it comes to writing my own stuff, I forgot about that. So hopefully your idea will help cement that so I could bring that back, because I really like it, because sometimes there are scenes where you think, well, it would be really cool if X happened, but what you've written beforehand does not emotionally lead up to that. And so do you force your characters into that situation? Do you change what you did before? I mean, but the way you're talking about it is, if you know the emotions when you're leaving the scene, you should know what they're going to do in the next scene.
Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean that I don't change things midway through. Matter of fact, there's a character in this book, Uncle Morty, that there was a different scene there. Uncle Morty didn't exist until like probably the fifth edit of this book, where I was doing a scene where they, June and Paul were in his office again, discussing part of the documentary, and I was reading it and I was like, oh, this is boring, I don't even want to edit it anymore. And so I was like, no, she needs more agency in this. She wouldn't just sit there and talk to him about how she couldn't get this interview. She would go out and she would get the dang interview. Mm-hmm. So she, like, you know, so then I rewrote the whole scene to be like, here's how she gets this interview. You know, yes, the guy has Alzheimer's and he's in Boston, but, you know, she's capable of taking a train to Boston, mm-hmm. and, you know, using her, you know, feminine wiles to get herself into this nursing home to see him and film him. Absolutely. So that's where Uncle Morty came from.
Wow. That's a big lead into Uncle Morty. Wow.
Right. And that's like one of the, and he's one of my favorite characters, because he's, you know, he's and he plays a pivotal kind of like that interview as sort of a pivotal space in the book.
I have to tell you in chat, we have Tree Lobster saying, I know of someone who was informed that their grandmother died, then told she wasn't actually, then later told she died again, often recounts the story of how Granny died twice in the same day. So Tree Lobsters get the are you sure thing.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that's awesome, Tree Lobsters. So does anybody in chat have questions about character building or anything else with Mindy? I want to talk about the mystery part of your story, because I kind of stumbled into writing mysteries. I thought I was selling a sci-fi book, but my editor's like, no, we need to beef up the murder mystery part. I'm like, murder mystery, okay. I don't know what that is. I just ate, it's mainlined Agatha Christie. I still do it on occasion. Because my stuff is much more just a mystery and not like psychological thriller with lots of twists. But how did you approach it? Have you always been a fan, or did you get the idea and then do research like I did, but I don't recommend?
I've always loved mysteries. I've always loved Agatha Christie in particular. Mm-hmm. So my mom I'd read all of the Nancy Drew books that they had in my very small school library, and I was like 9 or 10, and I was like, well, I finished the library. And she was like, well, there's other books that I could show you. So she handed me Agatha Christie, and I was hooked. And actually, this book is based on the disappearance of Agatha Christie in a very loose way.
I was gonna ask. That is really cool. Do you want to tell the chat and the people listening if they don't know the Agatha Christie story?
So
it's a real story.
It's so cool. I mean, it is. I mean, talk about like true crime OG. I think it was 1923 or 1926, but I think it was 23. She got into a fight with her husband. Her husband had decided that he would rather be married to his assistant, Nancy Neal, or his secretary, Nancy Neal. And she, he came to her and said, I want a divorce. And she said something of the effect of over my dead body. And he said, I would be happy to help you with that. And they fought. And then he said, I'm leaving. I'm going on a weekend away with friends with Miss Neal. And you can do what you want to do about the situation. And so he left. And a couple hours later, Agatha packed a bag, kissed her kid goodbye, who was with the nanny, and drove off into the night. And the next morning, they found her car, nose first, in a bush. Her suitcase was still in the back seat. Her coat was still in the back seat. The headlights were still on, but she was nowhere to be found. And they could not find any heads or tails of her anywhere. And there's actually wonderful articles from the London Daily News that sort of track the entire search for her. And at one point, they estimated they had between 10,000 and 15,000 people searching for her. And they even list like the kind of dogs that people brought to the search.
Oh my gosh.
It's amazing. It's like trained bloodhounds, a crate load of Airedale terriers, mini retrievers, Alsatian police dogs, and even the services of the common mongrel, which is just fantastic.
And that's very British.
I mean, it was literally everyone and their dog was out there searching for her. And then they found her 10 days later, 230 miles north of where she disappeared outside of London at Harrogate Spa up in Yorkshire. And she claimed to have amnesia. She had checked in under the name of Nancy Neal.
Oh,
you know, yeah, right. And like her husband showed up and they talked. She like didn't recognize him or claimed not to recognize him. And she went home with him and she never spoke of it again. 2 years later, they were divorced. She sued him for divorce and they were both very much happier after that. But she didn't even mention it in her autobiography. She's never mentioned it again.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, like, well, what if that had happened in the year 2000? Mm-hmm. Like, what if that had happened 20 years ago from when I was starting to write this book? You know, what would that have been? Like, of course it would have been, like, on every TV show. It would have been on Dateline. You know, 48 Hours would have had a whole segment on it.
There would be Reddit. You know? There would be subreddits dedicated to the conspiracy.
God, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, and that's part of the features that I put in the book. I put like a, basically a Reddit chat in the book. You know, this conspiracy theory website, greersgone.com, and, you know, put that in there. And then of course they would be making a documentary, which is how I decided to make her a documentary writer. But yeah, so that's kind of the basis of it. But in my book, you don't know what happens to Greer until, you know, it might be at the end, it might not be.
Wow, you know, it's funny. I knew Agatha Christie disappeared and no one ever knew what happened to her and then she came back, but you have so many more details. Did anybody ever try to see if there were dead people? If there were murders in there, because it really sounds like she was about to try to set up Nancy Neal for murder.
It's hard to know because, like, as somebody said in the chat, the mind does strange things to protect itself. And absolutely, there's absolutely signs that she had a nervous breakdown and that it was honest to goodness amnesia. But again, we're talking 1923. There's really no way that you can, like, there's no CAT scan that you can give her. There's no ultrasound.
Yeah.
You know, you just got to take her word for it. So it's entirely possible that she was doing it to teach him a lesson. Like, you know, if you screw around and I go missing, I can make your life a living hell. You know, I think, but there's also parts of it where it's like, you know, yeah, she may have really, like, something really bad may have happened to her. Maybe it was an attempted kidnapping, which is one thing that they suspected, and that she happened to escape, but she had some memory damage from maybe being hit in the head or something like that. She just ended up at the spa in Harrogate.
Yeah.
Of course, Nancy Neal's name is the last name that was on her mind, probably as she's driving out of the house.
Right. So someone asks who you are, and you say Nancy Neal, because that's what's on your brain. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. We do have a question from The Kids Are Asleep. Do you know who done it before you began, or does it emerge as you go?
For this book, I absolutely knew who done it, like, as I started writing, because I write the first scene and I write the last scene. And by last scene, I mean like the climactic scene of the book. Mm-hmm. So, and the climactic scene changed a couple of times, but I absolutely knew whodunit. The book that I'm currently working on, the whodunit has evolved slightly. So it's like, it's still kind of the same person that I had in mind, but like I'm playing with the idea of giving them some help, maybe. And I have another book that's done that's currently with a publisher, and they're deciding whether or not they would like to buy the book. Ooh. Where those who done it, it's that one is the TV show Friends meets Agatha Christie's book, And Then There Were None.
Oh.
So
please sell that book. I know there are several retellings of And Then There Were None. Apparently it's getting it's getting sort of like reawakened. I think there was a Japanese version I need to read. But it's, I love that story so much, even though it like breaks almost all the storytelling rules because like there's really no sleuth except for the reader and there's really no protagonist and it's just, and yet it's still just an amazing story. So yeah, if you, I really hope you sell it and keep in touch so we can know when it comes out because I would read the hell out of that.
Yeah, I'll absolutely let you know. I hope it sells too. I think it's going to be really good. That's just like, all these people get locked on an island together and then people start dying. So those particular things, I kind of knew who was going to die and I kind of knew who was going to do it. And then the kind of got all shored up. So the person I had in mind to be the villain at the very beginning is still the villain. But some of the people who have died are new additions. Like, mm-hmm. There were moments where there's a couple people that died that I did not plan for them to die. But then as I was writing the book, I was like, no, you really need to die. You know, the tension needs heightening. Mm-hmm. The plot needs to move along and another, like the hero needs another, kick to get them really sort of going on the investigation again.
Right. Well, excellent. I'm excited for it.
Yeah. So fingers crossed that I hear about that pretty soon.
If anybody else in the chat has any questions, or I'm going to be wrapping this up because I have kept Mindy for almost an hour now. Mindy, God,
I don't feel like it at all.
Thank you. Is there anything that I have not asked you that you would like to talk about with your process or Her Dying Day?
Let's see. Well, one thing about Her Dying Day, for the structure, how I structured the book, though, is that I have excerpts of Greer's books inside of the chapter, like in between some chapters.
That's right. So, I was going to ask you about that. Thank you for bringing that up.
Oh yeah. No, it's one of my favorite things that I had to do because I had to write a book as Greer Larkin at age like 15, 17, 18. You know, I had to embody what would that particular thing be because she was a prodigy writer. Mm-hmm. But I wanted her to have a voice in the book, but she's not there in the book. She can't be there. She's gone.
Yeah.
So somehow her voice needed to be heard. And I leaned on the adage of writers write from some of their life experiences. Like occasionally their life experiences make it into the book. For example, I lived in a commune in Berkeley for a little while. So part of that experience was inside of that book. And so, but for her, I wanted some of her real life experiences to be told through her own writing. And so there are just quick little excerpts inside of the book that help the readers, give the reader some clues as to what was happening in Greer's life at the time.
So how do you do that? Because when I was, starting to make my career, someone was complimenting me on my voice. And I'm like, I don't see anything special or unique about my writing style. I could tell you about a whole bunch of other people that they have unique voices, but I don't. And so I can't, it's like you can't hear your own accent. You can't hear your own voice. So how do you write like somebody else?
It was a little bit tricky. I did it longhand for one thing. And that's something I'm doing for other my three point of view book. I have one character. I can only write her stuff, her point of view through longhand because that's just how her voice is. So for Greer's writing, I wrote it all through longhand and I sort of plotted out the book a little bit, like what is happening in the scene, what needs to happen. It was almost like writing flash fiction. Mm-hmm. And of course, Greer is a different author than what I am. I mean, I'm thinking of her as a real person, which helps because I write very funny. I write sharp, yes, witty, acidic, and Greer's writing is very gritty, true crime, noir detective, sort of Agatha Christie-esque writing. So I really just sat down and tried to channel my like inner Agatha Christie meets Dashiell Hammett and write down what that scene needed to be.
And as a 15-year-old girl in 2000.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because 2000, like, I set the disappearance in 2000 because 2000 is really one of the last years where you can make somebody disappear, mm-hmm, and their digital footprint doesn't exist really yet.
Yeah.
So because you can have people who they have a Facebook page, they have a Twitter page, and it's kind of like there's some of that to be managed. There was some of that could have been done, used to be, if it was set in more modern, you could use some of that to throw people off the trail. But I wanted the question of whether she was alive or not to be very ambiguous throughout the entire book. And really one of the last places to do that is the year 2000, mm-hmm. because credit card footprints are different. The cell phones aren't really being used by everybody quite yet. And if they are, there's certainly not a smartphone. And so I wanted it to be something where, like, she could have conceivably just disappeared, or the villain could have conceivably just killed her and buried her in the woods somewhere, mm-hmm. and she would never be seen from again, because there's no way to digitally track her.
Yeah. It's funny, my husband came up to me the other day. He's very excited because he found one of those carbon copy credit card slips. He found a receipt. He's like, "Wow, look at this ancient thing." Yeah.
It's like back in the oldie times.
Yes,
children.
Exactly.
Gather around, listen to your Gen X elder.
Yeah, exactly. Mindy, this has been a delight. Her Dying Day is a lot of fun. Really, really just awesome to read. And recommend everybody get it if you're into mysteries. I know I usually do SF people, but Mindy just looked too awesome to pass up. So,
well, thank you. Well, and I love reading sci-fi. I love, like, one of my favorite books right now is Claudia Gray's Lost Stars, which
Gray's amazing.
I love Claudia Gray. My kids are way into sci-fi fantasy and stuff. We are a D&D household.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a regular D&D game we play. My 13-year-old has a bunch of his middle school friends who come by on the regular, and they all play D&D together.
Excellent.
Lord of the Rings is our second language. I mean, one of my cats, which is kind of behind me on the bed, that you can't see, his name is Durin Orcslayer.
Do you do the whole name when you're angry, or?
Well, it is really fun at the vet.
I see.
And the technician comes out and says, "Durin Orcslayer." And we just go, "Yes, that's it. Durin Orcslayer." And as we say, our house has been orc-free for 4 years now.
You know, you can't fight with data like that.
No, I mean, really. Correlation is causation, right?
That's right. I don't know if my automatic stuff has been happening, but I'm going to put guest information in the chat now.
Oh, please. Come look me up. Yes. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram. I've got a newsletter that is, you know, marginally entertaining.
Excellent. Real quick, what are you reading right now?
Oh, gosh. About four different things. First, I'm reading The Woman with Two Shadows by Sarah James. I do reviews for The Big Thrill, which is a mystery magazine. And so I'm currently reading The Darkness of Others by Kate Holohan, which is a forthcoming book. I've been obsessed with Lore Olympus lately. I bought her, I've been reading it for years, and then I bought, Rachel's two books, volume one and volume two, which then encouraged me to go through and start all over again with Lore Olympus and read it all the way through to Sunday's upload.
Mm-hmm.
So those are really the things I've been reading.
Very cool.
And then hopefully in a couple weeks, I'll be reading a publishing contract.
Woo! Definitely. We'll definitely be hoping for that. Can't wait for that. I found out there's two books about murder grannies coming out. Well, there's one that's already out, and I'm very excited because I love murder grannies. So, there's a killer of a killers of a certain age, and I can't remember the other one's name. It's a Swedish book that just got translated. I'll have to find it, but that's the thriller, murder mystery I'm really into, is the, just give the grannies the murder gene.
I've been really into, enchanted with Richard Osman's writing. I knew him from when he was a comedian first.
Oh, wow.
And now it's really fun to see him writing these humorous granny mysteries.
Yes, that you're referring to a Thursday Murder Club.
The Thursday Murder Club, yes. And I think his new one is The Bullet That Missed.
Yes.
So I have that on pre-order.
Yeah, I've got, it's An Elderly Lady Is Up to No Good is a Swedish book.
Excellent. Yeah. Okay. Thank you for putting that out there.
Yes.
I'm always looking to add to my to-be-read list, even though my to-be-read list is, I think, taller than I am at this point.
Oh, yeah. Mine's awful, but I just bought a whole bunch of books myself. But anyway, that's what we do. We love to read. We love to write. So do you have any advice for beginning writers?
Be brave.
I like
definitely that. be brave. Do the thing that scares you the most, and don't apologize.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, thank you so much, Mindy. For those of you listening later, this is mindycarlson.com. That's where you can find her. I am Mer Lafferty. You can find me at merverse.com. Station Eternity is out in 2 months, officially, 2 months now, and I'm not nervous at all. So that'll be out, and you can follow this on Twitch, Tuesday, Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Tonight and every Thursday this month, I'm going to be doing a Brindlewood Bay live stream. I said I liked murder grannies. We got more grannies investigating murder. And that's going to be with Ursula Vernon, Gwenda Bond, Joey T. Badger, and Numbers Ninja. And we're going to be doing that tonight at 8. If you have the time to stop by, that would be great. And I'll be back on Monday with Alistair Stewart on Ditch Diggers, where we're going to talk about the business of writing. And boy, there's lots of stuff to talk about with DOJ and publisher and Penguin Random House. So that's fun.
I can't wait. I'm totally going to tune into that one.
Excellent. Mindy's book is Her Dying Day. It is a lot of fun. I really loved it. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I can't wait to come back.
Yay. I want that too. What are you sighing, Kids Are Asleep? Oh, that. The you're sighing about the trial, right. Sorry, I'm on to things. I know what's going on. I really do. And I'll just see you guys in a couple of hours, actually.
I Should Be Writing is available to you under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Theme music by John Anilio. Art by Numbers Ninja. Production by Summer Brooks. And hosting by Libsyn. Find all of this information and more at merverse.com. And remember, we can't do this without you. Thanks for your support. Doctor Who. I'm sitting home watching Doctor Who.